Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to Catherine's back garden. That's where we're recording this week's tennis podcast, and we've just spent the last 3 minutes revealing our football fandom woes, because Matt's team has just lost 0-4 at the weekend, so he's looking forward to next season. Catherine's team just about escaped relegation by the skin of the teeth, and my team are in the playoffs, and they ain't going up. So anyway, let's talk about tennis, because that's what's better on the tennis podcast, isn't it, really? I'm David Law. Matt Roberts is here. Catherine Whittaker's here. We've got loads to talk about. It was yesterday, the Madrid men's singles final, and it was pretty routine in the end, wasn't it, as a final goes, compared, I think, to what we probably expected it to be. Because, I mean, all the way through the tournament, there'd been all sorts of drama and epics.
Yeah, it was a brilliant week. I think it was one of the best Masters 1000 weeks that I can remember in recent years. I think the first time this year we've had four top 10 players in a semi-final, and so yeah, I just sort of assumed the final would be some kind of epic, and it was a bit of a letdown because it was just a ruthless, merciless performance from the world number one. I mean, it was a tactical masterclass, which I find very interesting given his main coach Marion Vida wasn't in tow last week in Madrid. A real tactical masterclass from Djokovic, and just, I mean, Stefanos Tsitsipas. I'm really trying to retrain myself because everyone's now making the point.
Are they?
It's Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Someone has to reach the top 10 before you really get in trouble for pronouncing their name wrong.
Greg
Rozeski is earnestly carrying on with Shapovalov. But when he reaches the top 10, he'll have to readjust.
I spent nine years calling Thomas Burdick the wrong name. So.
People are still doing that, though, aren't they?
What is the right name?
It is Burdick.
Yeah.
Burdick.
But then, Burdick.
Yeah, but this rabbit hole is problematic because you always end up at Shafar, don't you? Which is technically how you're supposed to say Lucy Safarova's name.
Yes, I think Thomas Burdick I tried to sell to the nation for about 10 years and nobody seemed to go with that, but there we are. So in terms of the actual tennis and not just the names, incidentally, they're still calling him Djokovic, aren't they? I mean,
but is that, I don't think that's a pronunciation thing, I just think that's an American's thing.
Yeah. Jim Curry is still not speaking to me about that because I argued with him about it about 6 years ago. Anyway, so the week itself, I just find it so interesting. We'll start with the men's tournament because that's where we've begun the conversation. I just find it really interesting the way that Djokovic is just now surfacing after really four very, very quiet months by his standards.
Yeah, I mean, he'd done more holidaying than he had winning over the past few months since the Australian Open. Took that 44-day break before rocking up in Indian Wells, and then said after losing early to Cole Schreiber in Indian Wells that he regretted those preparations, or certainly that he wouldn't prepare that way for that period in the season again, and then proceeded to go on another holiday to the Dominican Republic, I think. I mean, all sounds great.
I would do it.
And before this tournament, you know, in the Prime Video studio, we were all making a big joke of how Djokovic has been taking too many holidays, and now he's sort of three holidays, one Grand Slam and one Masters Series, and those are great numbers. He's living his best life.
It's the perfect year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't work too much, but when you do, make it count.
Yeah, I mean, I know you predicted Djokovic to click into gear and win this week, David, but...
Did I? No, I didn't.
This is why I wasn't allowed to set the agenda today. Yeah. Otherwise, we would have started with that.
I said Federer would win the tournament. That didn't go too well. But I did say that Djokovic would win the French Open because... And I kind of thought it would happen more in Rome. I thought Rome would be where he made his move and started to look like himself. It's the peaking that I find so interesting. And that's what I want to talk to you about, is where do you think that he's certainly trying in Indian Wells and Miami and all those tournaments. He's trying to win them, but he hasn't got the edge that he has when there's a Grand Slam on the horizon. Because I just think, I don't think Nadal's like this. Nadal is a different animal altogether. He only knows one way, just put the foot down and keep going until you hit a brick wall. Djokovic has another gear altogether, which I think he can only find when it matters more than anything else to him, and that can only be at the Slams these days. I think in the past it used to be at Masters Series, and look, he can still win those things because he's that good, but I think he found it when he needed to win the Davis Cup 7 or 8 years ago, whenever it was, the ATP Finals, when he's needed to. But look what happened when he played Zverev in the O2. That edge was missing from him. I know Zverev was brilliant, but that edge wasn't there. Click into gear at Wimbledon last year. Remember that Khachanov match that I always talk about, simply because that's that match, the one he played against Nadal in the final of the Australian Open, the one he played over the last 2 days, that is Djokovic's level that I don't think anybody else has, that kind of tennis, that ability to beat anybody. Doesn't matter who they are.
Yeah, he's kind of like a distance runner, just timing his charge, isn't he, to the finish. He's been comfortably watching a race ahead of him since the Australian Open, and now he's thinking, right, I'm going to get my legs moving, and I'm just going to pass all of you. And it was the team match for me where I kind of thought, okay, this is Djokovic means it now. He'd had that day off, hadn't he, against Cilic when he gave him the walkover, and quite often that can almost
that
disrupt rhythm and
to his detriment. Yeah,
there was a time a couple of years ago where he had a quarterfinal against Nishikori and he had a walkover, and then he came out and played Nadal and he was really flat and lost. But against team, he was just on it straight away, and all the signs, all the Djokovic signs that he's playing his best, the defence, the defiance, the sort of just desire to make that extra ball, it was all there, and the focus in the tie breaks to beat team, because team was playing really well. I thought team had a great week, but Djokovic is doing things now that he wasn't doing at Indian Wells, Miami and Monte Carlo, and you have to think that the reason he's doing it is because Roland Garros is in 10 days or whatever.
He made Dominic Thiem go back to being team of a couple of years ago. He made him feel like he had to go for too much. He made
desperate.
We've been talking all week and the couple of weeks before, particularly obviously when he won Barcelona, about how team seems to believe that he's good enough now without having to redline his game. He feels like his 90% is good enough, and he doesn't have to be at 100% throughout a match to beat the top guys. Well, Djokovic got him feeling pretty early on, although team did lead with a break in both those sets, but it always felt like he was under extreme pressure throughout. It's that relentless wearing pressure that Djokovic applies to you, and he made Dominic Thiem lash out. He made him feel like he had to go for too much and go for radical shot selections that weren't really on, and that's what he does to people at their best, and it's what he did a little bit to Stefanos Tsitsipas in the final, but more that was just a merciless attrition. He knew that Tsitsipas had very little left in the legs, and he just manoeuvred him side to side and then teed off on the backhand down the line, and it was a masterclass.
Stops them playing their game, doesn't he? He puts the ball so deep, so regularly on to the sidelines. they don't really have a chance to do what they want to do. And I think they end up being really frustrated by it. And that's when the team thrashing comes out, you know, when he just thinks, right, well, I've got to tee off and go for stuff that, you know, you might be able to pull it off for a little while, but chances of doing it over a long period are fewer.
And, yeah. And he's the best at playing the game he wants to play. He makes the others adapt to him, doesn't he? So you rarely have to see Djokovic start teeing off and playing a load of shots that he's not comfortable with, because he's the one setting the tempo and sort of dictating. And a great quote from Tsitsipas after the match, he said that Djokovic has got the best backhand he's ever seen by a human being. I want to know what animals have got better backhands than Djokovic.
Have you not seen Godzilla's backhand? It's an amazing one.
Yeah, I mean, Tsitsipas, a little bit like after the Australian Open defeat to Nadal, which of course he avenged in the Madrid semi-finals, which I'm sure we'll come on to talk about, but he looked, after the Djokovic final yesterday, just as he did after that Nadal, he completely shell-shocked. And I love that he goes into these matches expecting himself to win, totally expecting himself to win, almost sort of assuming that he'll win, and yet without seeming arrogant. I don't know. I know that's not scientific, and I'm sure some people do find him arrogant. I personally don't. I find him charmingly likeable.
Endearing, isn't it?
He's just so earnest. Yeah. So earnest about everything he does, and it's completely unfiltered. He doesn't give two hoots what anybody thinks of him, and that how can you not like that? But yeah, I mean, he was crushed. He was crushed, I think. It was that same feeling of, oh my goodness, I wasn't even in the match. I didn't even have a chance today. I think if he'd actually have been less heartbroken had it been a nail-biting 7-6 in the third loss, that he just looked like he'd been steamrolled, and it hadn't even occurred to him that he might lose in straight sets to Djokovic.
To have his game diffused like that would not have occurred to him. And I mean, look, all the evidence for him would have been that I'm right in this and I probably will win. Because, A, he'd beaten him before, and it was Toronto last year, wasn't it? Again, though, that's not Djokovic yet. Mm-hmm. And the other elements are that he'd had a really good week. He'd come off winning the title in Estoril, and then he'd come in, he'd beaten Verdasco, who's a good player on clay, in front of his own fans. Then he goes and beats Zverev in just one of the matches that makes you so happy that you love sport. You know, I heard a lot of people talking about the football this week and talking about those incredible comebacks.
Talking about football, David.
All right, well, let's talk about teams other than ours, like good teams, like Liverpool and Spurs, and those incredible rescued victories from the jaws of defeat.
Why couldn't I have been born in Liverpool?
Well, I mean, I could go through the details of that, and
or like North London.
Yeah, well, you weren't, right? You were born in Reading.
I actually wasn't born in Reading.
No, well, that's who your heart is wedded to.
Shrewsbury Town.
Even worse.
Wasn't a particularly appealing prospect.
My point is that I've heard so many people say, imagine if you didn't like football after the week that football fans have just had to enjoy.
And poor you.
And while we were watching Tsitsipas against Zverev and watching these two young players, 21 and 20, just going at it and also pouring the heart out at the same time, because we saw some of the things that make Zverev very watchable, the way he was digging into himself and prepared to have a little bit of a head-to-head with Tsitsipas and have a complain and you know, and it was just glorious. It was a joy to behold. I enjoyed his quote afterwards saying, you know, I got better last week than I did this week, and then I got better in the first round, second round. By the time it's French Open, I'll be perfect.
Yeah, I mean, there were similarities between Zverev and Djokovic this week. Obviously, Djokovic, you know, put the thrusters on and went those several stages further. But I really think that was a corner turned, and crucially, the fire in the belly was back for Djokovic. It was back for Djokovic, but back for Zverev this week. It's been missing. We talked a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Touched upon what he'd told the German press about the reasons why it might have been missing, all of which sound entirely understandable, but yeah, the fire in the belly was there. His game did just it, it, it was about the game, and the game came up short. I do just wonder if he needs to add a little something. Is he? How much is it about sort of the struggles and sort of assuming that once he puts those to one side, he will return to his sort of the expectation that he will win Grand Slams and more Masters series. But
is Tsitsipas just a better player?
That was how I came out of that match feeling. Yeah.
He's got a lot more options, I think, in his game. He's got more ways to beat you. It's very of if he's really not firing from the back of the court, he gets a bit defensive and he stands like 5 or 6, 7 feet behind the baseline. You just think he's just kind of a baseliner. What's he actually doing here to win these points? But I do wonder whether, I mean, nobody is picking Zverev to win the French Open, and I think maybe at the Australian Open, most people were picking Djokovic, but Zverev was kind of next, given what he'd done in London. I do wonder whether
Are you throwing Zverev into the French Open mix, Matt?
By saying that he's
what you are by just
don't
doing?
Let him get out of it by saying mix, because of course he's in
what
the mix.
What is happening well, here?
By are saying you that saying he's going to win it?
No. By saying that he's not in the mix, I'm tentatively predicting that he might be in the mix.
Don't give him the mix as a way of getting out of putting his head on the block.
I wouldn't put him even in the mix.
I mean, I don't think he's in the mix, but I wonder whether the lack of expectation for once at a slam might help him, or whether it's just going to be another...
I really feel like the draw is going to be a big one for Zverev.
He's going to be outside the top four seeds.
And he's going to be susceptible. Oh, there's another person on crutches.
Yeah, Catherine's on crutches, everybody, just so that now you know. All right.
I feel such solidarity. I just felt this overwhelming need to go over and hug her.
She hasn't looked that happy for 6 weeks.
Apparently, that's not something you're allowed to do. He's going to be susceptible in those early rounds, I think. So the draw will be crucial. But if he wins a couple...
He needs to avoid Garin. That would
doesn't,
be my...
Doesn't everybody?
Roland on Garros, very draw.
Who's more
prediction.
In the mix, Garin or Zverev? Zverev.
Zverev.
Yeah.
What is the mix?
Is the mix Djokovic?
It's whatever you want it to be.
Right. Exactly, Catherine.
Is Tsitsipas in the mix?
He's fourth.
Oh, numbers.
See, I like this. That's
Hang on.
Specific. I like
We've
that.
Gone from a vague... Okay, he's fourth behind Nadal, Djokovic, Team. Oh, sorry. It just rolled off the tongue because you say Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, and I instantly regretted it. He's fourth ahead of Federer.
Yeah, I think so.
Tsitsipas, something that struck me, talking of Federer, and I know it's very easy to make comparisons and so forth. One thing that does strike me is their respective builds. Now, I know Tsitsipas is much taller than Federer, but when Federer was coming through 20 years ago, I always remember looking at his forearms and thinking how weak he looked. You know, he's so skinny. And I used to think, how is this...
Get in the gym, mate.
Yeah. I used to think, get in the gym, mate. How is this frame going to cope on at that sort of level? And I remember speaking to Per Bastholt, the ATP trainer, and he said, the thing is, his grip, we do grip tests with the machine that show that he has the strongest grip on the circuit, and this is when he was a teenager, and I found that really interesting. And watching Tsitsipas, the way, I mean, his back end, it's these single handers, they're a thing of beauty, aren't they, if they're really struck well, but often they can be erratic. Never feel like his is going to be erratic. It always feels like he's in total control of it. It feels like it can absorb the power of his opponent. I mean, he got the sledgehammer two-hander coming at him from Zverev, and he was handling it. And he also has control. He has the most beautiful flight on the backhand. The way it loops, it's got power, but it loops, and it always just dies within, you know, a couple of feet of the baseline. So he feels like he's got margin, power, control, spin, everything.
Yeah, I mean, usually Nadal smells blood when he sees a single-handed backhand, doesn't he?
Yes,
he
well, there you go. Yeah,
he I didn't mean, in
even
that
more extreme example is to be able to take on Nadal, who's going to zone in on that shot, a guy who's just owned him previously, and it was really interesting to watch.
And Nadal had just demolished Wawrinka, who most people would say probably has the best one-handed backhand, and he just broke it down. I mean, he broke Wawrinka, all of Wawrinka down, not just his backhand. But I never watch Tsitsipas and think, oh, he's going to miss a backhand, in the way that even with Federer, sometimes you're almost expecting the shank. But you never expect that with Tsitsipas. He's so solid from the baseline, and yet he can do all the other fancy stuff as well.
And he's got the movement that someone like Wawrinka doesn't have. Mm. Although, I mean, he's not a bad mover, but Tsitsipas looks like an Olympic athlete.
Yeah, despite being... For 6'4", I mean, I think sort of movement ability relative to height, he's in the top percentile, I think. I mean, I know you've got... There are guys a bit... I mean, I think Zverev, actually. He's 6'6", which, generally speaking, is considered a bit too tall.
What are you saying?
But I think he's been one of the upper percentiles as well. But Tsitsipas, for 6'4", he glides around the court. And particularly his longitudinal movement to the net... He's lightning fast, and it is a joy to see him up there.
Brings us on to his doubles. The fact that here he was, he reached the semi-finals in the doubles. I kind of, when you told me that he was a few weeks back, that he'd given that speech with Wesley Kuhlhoff and he was planning to play all these Masters 1000 doubles events, honestly, I just thought, yeah, right, mate. I'll believe that when I see it. And here he was, going out onto the court. What time did he finish on semi-finals night in the doubles? Or was it quarter-finals night in the doubles?
Yeah, 12:57 a.m.
So he's finished at nearly 1 in the morning.
And that was after he'd played a pretty marathon singles match against Zverev.
Yeah. And then he's out to play
Nadal. Lost 10-5 in the Champions tie. He wanted to win that doubles. Yeah. Desperately.
I mean, yeah, so he beat Nadal on the same day that he... Yeah. Finished his doubles, but sort of 23 hours later. I mean, by my experience, he was just settling into the rhythm of Madrid, really. I mean, people are doing things that you wouldn't normally be doing at 1 o'clock in the morning in Madrid.
I interviewed Andy Murray at 3:57 a.m. after a first, or it would have been the second round, because he got a bye, second round victory over Philip Kohlschreiber, I think 3 years ago.
Everybody loves seeing you.
Everyone was delighted about it.
so then the same day, effectively, he comes out and he plays Rafael Nadal and beats him.
And everyone assumes he's going to be physically spent, you know, not have enough left in the tank, particularly against Nadal, somebody that he's lost to all three previous occasions they've played, never won a set, only managed to break his serve once, whereas I think Tsitsipas had his serve broken 14 times in their previous meetings. And, you know, we all remember, I think we're all three of us, certainly Matt and I were both in the room for that Tsitsipas press conference after the Australian Open semi-final, where he was at a total loss. You know, just that the figure of Tsitsipas sat there searching for words to try and describe how he was feeling was really affecting. And he just... I felt like he physically couldn't go through that again. He emotionally couldn't go through...
Quite a driving force, isn't it?
Yeah, losing to Nadal like that again. I certainly don't think he could have gone through feeling as hopeless against Nadal as he had done the previous three times. He had to get a bit closer. I'm getting closer.
Yeah. The impressions are coming out awesome. The doubles element, generally, we've suddenly seen an absolute raft of players, both in Madrid and in Rome, playing doubles.
It's happening.
It does feel like there is a shift here. I don't know whether that statistically we can.
Yeah,
prove that.
Sam Smith was with us in the Prime Video studio yesterday, and she said that she made the point that tennis players are like sheep, and they tend to just copy what the top guys are doing. You know, in particular for the last 10 to 15 years, Roger Federer, who hasn't played a whole lot of doubles. I know he's an Olympic doubles champion with Stan Wawrinka, and I'm sure he could be world doubles number one if he fancied it, but basically doesn't play doubles. Yeah. And so pretty difficult to think well, you know, I can do something that Roger Federer can't.
Yeah.
But now,
Tsitsipas is a game changer.
It's coming back into fashion, isn't it? Shapovalov is playing. He's been playing alongside Rahan Bopan. You know, they're teaming up with doubles specialists, and I think that's working because some of them have needed the singles ranking to help them gain entry, because you do it on combined ranking, don't you, to gain entry into the Masters events, which can be incredibly competitive, the ones with the smaller draws. Shapovalov's been doing it. Zverev, of course, playing with his brother. That's sort of a natural in. Dominic Thiem reached the final in Madrid with Diego Schwartzman. They're one of my new fave pairings.
Awesome.
But I do wonder how sustainable it is, though, because, I mean, it's great. I love seeing them play doubles. But do we not think that the amount of tennis Tsitsipas played this week in the end had a detrimental effect on him in the final?
He was running on fumes in the final. But
I mean, Djokovic said it himself. You know, I basically sensed that he was tired, take his legs away.
I mean, I think...
Is that playing doubles or is that playing as much tennis as he's been playing? You know, his schedule-wise,
yeah,
he's been playing week in, week out. I think if he plays fewer events, I think...
Which is more important, to play less doubles or fewer events?
Well, he says that the doubles is helping his singles.
Good grammar game there, David. Well done.
With his, in terms of his, certainly his net game, he says as much as it's just actually improving the technique on the volley, just having the confidence to come to the net, which when you're confident to come to the net, that almost improves your ground strokes as well because you're hitting them with kind of forward momentum.
I think it's going to be good for Dominic Thiem as well, because probably the one area that he is lacking a bit is feel. So I think that'd be good for. I think it's brilliant. I think if you can manage your schedule, there is a way to incorporate a decent amount of doubles.
He couldn't do it at the Slams, could he? And I think at least I don't think he will. Actually, I think he could try, but
he said he's not doing it at the Slams.
In answer to your
can he play mixed with Maria Sakkari?
Well, that'd be good. In answer to your question, was it not a factor in that final? I think it might have been, but I also think it might end up giving him a better chance when he's not playing doubles at Slams to win them, because of all the additional skills that he will have added to his game.
Yeah, and the fact that he's almost playing as much tennis in a week in a Masters series if he goes deep in both events than you have to win a Slam with five sets and everything. He's building fitness as well.
Yeah, I think net-wise, it's overall really good. I think possibly every now and then it will lead to him losing matches that if he had slightly fresher legs or a bit more sleep, he would have won. And possibly, I mean, I don't think even if he did have more in the legs, he would have beaten Djokovic yesterday. But you know, it would have been more of a contest.
Be great.
But
20
net wise, overall, he is a better player for the doubles that he plays.
What's it like being 20, Matt? Is it good?
I don't know.
A few years ago.
Right, yeah. Okay. But the thing is, I mean, I cannot stress how amazing that performance against Nadal was from Tsitsipas. I mean, honestly, I think that was better than his performance to beat Federer in Melbourne.
I agree.
I mean, given the background of the fact that he was so confused and shell-shocked and just dazed about how even to play Nadal, let alone beat him. And then he's done it on clay. I mean, extraordinary performance from Tsitsipas. And not just the tennis, but as you said, the movement. I didn't think he could move like that.
And on the clay court as well. So Nadal's all right, isn't he? No worries about Nadal?
Well, I think Nadal still has a few worries about Nadal. So
he does like a whinge there, doesn't he? I mean, I love Nadal, but he is a bit of a glasses half empty bloke in the press conferences, isn't he?
Although I thought it was interesting after the Tsitsipas where he said this was about my level tonight. Like, he said if I was playing my best, I would have won that. Which is kind of an unlike Nadal to say something
like
that.
And Tsitsipas kind of agreed with him,
didn't he?
He said he actually found it easier to play Nadal on clay this time. He said that it wasn't, the ball didn't quite feel the same as it felt in that Australian Open semi-final.
Had a bit more time.
Yeah, exactly. He felt he had a bit more time, which of course clay does give you, but equally, you wouldn't be feeling that about Nadal at his very best, would you? So I don't know. I'm still not quite hitting the panic button because there were there were reasons to be cheerful for Nadal fans, not least that Wawrinka performance, which was, I mean, it wasn't a match.
No. I've been left confused by this week, because after the Wawrinka performance, I thought, how have I even allowed it to enter my mind that Nadal is not the French Open favourite? Of course he is. He can play like this on clay. No one's beating him. And then he went and lost his next match, and I thought, oh.
Yeah.
And then Djokovic won the tournament, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe he's the French Open favourite. But I do think I'm confused.
Rome's big, isn't it? Mm. Rome's big for Nadal.
I mean, Nadal, the one year he played Roland Garros without winning any tournament in the European clay court swing was 2015, and he
that was
got
the quarterfinal
thrashed by Djokovic.
Loss. Yeah. Ooh.
So interesting. Mm. Rome is coming, folks, and Roger Federer is going to be there.
It's here.
It starts today as we speak. It's
he did
on.
A very perky Instagram.
He's
message.
Weighed in on social media to announce his going against his using social media as a platform to say things. Strategy.
maybe that was somebody knocking on his door with a phone in his face saying, "Roger, are you playing Rome?" Well, I just wanted to let you know that. Roger Federer is in Rome. He looked pretty good, didn't he? I mean, he was beating Dominic Thiem, then it turned around. I mean, Thiem showed again that he doesn't panic most of the time.
Unless he's playing Djokovic.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, so he was. I think that does show just why, when they're all at their best, Djokovic is the best, really.
Yeah.
Because he can take it out of their hands.
And
he stops them playing. He stops them being themselves.
He's the neutralizer.
Yeah, it's very
which isn't a sexy nickname. But
no, but it's...
if it gets you three holidays, a Grand Slam title, and a Masters in the space of 4 months, then good luck to him.
Neutralizer law. That's me next week.
You've taken four holidays like in your life, David.
I mean, it is cool to see Federer playing on clay again. I thought that we would see him playing on clay again for a kind of farewell tour, but he's pretty serious about this. I mean, he was peeved to lose the team.
Maybe something beautiful can happen.
Do you know, I actually think he is playing a bit on clay right now because it's kind of a farewell tour.
Do you?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do. And that's not to say I think he won't play another year. I think he
will. Okay, but you think this could be his last go at clay?
Look, he ain't playing clay next year, I don't think, because of the Olympics. I think there's no chance he plays clay next year because he is all about winning that Olympic singles gold. You know, he's changed his... by all accounts, that's what drove the Uniqlo deal, the Olympics in Tokyo.
I think he's feeling good, and he's thought, you know, I really want to play Rome. I miss it. I want to play, and I'm going to play.
But the thing is, Madrid is the...
Because I might not have any more chances. I really do.
And Madrid is the clay court event with the least similarity to Roland Garros. So it's almost the event where it is hardest to draw these conclusions. And I don't think Federer can play as he did against Thiem. I don't think he can play like that in Rome... And in Roland Garros, where it's so much slower.
He turned into a hard court serve volley. Yeah. So much serve volley. Possibly even overplayed it a little against Thiem because he was seeing it coming. I think he broke... There were a couple of crucial points where Thiem picked him off on the return and made Federer look sort of stranded up at the net, which you don't often see. Yeah, it will be interesting to see how he tackles Rome.
Well, we'll tell you all about that in next week's tennis podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So, the women's draw. Kiki Bertens, the champion. I love that, don't you?
The champion without dropping a set.
Was she? Is that right?
Mm. Yeah. Crikey.
First woman ever to win Madrid without dropping a set.
Wow, I missed that stat.
And she beat...
It's just a Chinook, David, just a casual Chinook.
I think somebody heard me saying it might be Roger Federer's last year. I'm going to be taken away. Right.
And she beat four Grand Slam champions.
Yeah. So, reel them off. Who did she beat?
Ostapenko.
Yeah.
Remember when she won a Grand Slam?
That was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ostapenko won the
Feels
French.
Like longer.
Sloane Stephens, Petra Kvitova, and Simona Halep.
Wow.
And I think Sevastova was in there as well.
That is some run from Kiki Bertens, who I don't know. I don't know a person that wasn't just delighted. I mean, even Simona Halep looked quite pleased about it. I mean, she high-fived her on the way to picking up the trophy.
Yeah, it was really nice, wasn't it? I was just kind of assuming that Simona Halep would come back in that second set and at least take it to a decider. And of course, if it had, then Halep would have been the favourite. I saw a tweet from Chris Clary of the New York Times saying that a few years ago he was chatting to a Dutch journalist and he asked them whether the Netherlands had any tennis prospects. And they said, oh, well, on the women's side, there's this one girl, but I'm not sure she's got the head for it.
Yeah.
Which I found really interesting because that's her biggest asset, her head. I mean, let's be honest, her technique, her shot making is not, it's unorthodox, isn't it? It's not, you know, we were sat there prepping for our men's matches on Saturday, watching that women's final, and there was all sorts of analysis of Kiki Bertens' service motion going on, and it's you'd never teach it. It's not that pretty. And certainly her shot production, I mean, boy, is it effective. But she's a maximiser, as Greg would say, an absolute maximiser. She is hardworking. She's rinsing her talent, and that's mental. That's mental talent. And so I'm surprised that... I know she's quite emotional on the court, but that's not a weakness.
But no, I think it's a strength.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
But I think all that is quite new as well. I was listening to the... WTA Insider podcast with Kiki Bertens and
you traitor.
He's just getting info.
Simon Briggs has cheated on us as well.
Yeah.
She's just getting.
At least, I mean, I wasn't on the WTA Insider podcast.
He was. Courtney does a superb job. So
it is a good podcast.
So what Matt's doing is he's gleaning all the info so we can give it to you.
Mm. And Kiki Bertens said she used to think a good season was like having a good performance in a slam, and like that was kind of. That was kind of it. You know, she'd done what she set out to do for that season. But now she's much more ambitious.
That's the difference to me, is I think, whereas you said her head, I think the biggest thing holding her back was her own sense of self-worth.
She almost quit tennis two years ago.
I don't think she rated herself particularly highly. I don't think she backed herself to be a champion, really. I think she thought she's a good player, but I think she held herself back and... It's when you say rinsed the talent out of herself, I mean, obviously she is doing that, but in order to do that, she's had to completely lay a new framework of ambition and expectation for herself. I don't know how big a factor Raymond Slaughter would be in that, her coach. I mean, I know him as a person. I think he's just such a perfect fit.
A lovely dynamic.
Yeah, and I could imagine him just being able to explain to her, you don't believe in yourself enough, and you need to, because he knows that he had a limit as a tennis player when he was on the tour, and I would suspect he'd be able to give her a keener sense of what she's capable of. And my goodness, she's right up there. I mean, she's a proper clay court player. Mm.
She's in the mix, Matt.
She's definitely in the
give
mix.
Give me a number.
2?
Oh, goodness me. I wasn't expecting
that. I'm regretting that immediately.
Do you know, when you put Kiki into Google, that it doesn't even auto-complete with the suggestion
of
Burton's.
Who does it suggest to you?
D, Kiki D.
Who's that?
Don't go breaking my heart.
I won't. Having
said that about...
You don't know who Kiki D is?
Well, I do now.
She's more your generation than my generation.
Am I forgiven for not knowing who she is?
Yeah, Matt's all right. David, you should know.
Musical tastes are not just about age.
No, it's not taste. It's just...
Clearly it is.
I didn't say I liked Kiki D. I'm not a closet Kiki D fan.
Well, I mean,
if we were in the Patney Exchange, we could do a little straw poll and see how many people have heard of Kiki Burton's.
We're only around the corner.
Yeah, that this is a Tennessee part of the world.
I don't think... I mean, I put this on Twitter. I don't think... If you're not really interested in tennis, I think there's zero chance that you've heard of Kiki Burton's.
Yeah, there will be casual tennis fans that have not heard of Kiki Burton's.
And I honestly think she's... Yeah, I mean, okay, I've said 2 and immediately regretted that, but I think she's very...
Oh, hang on. What would your revised number be?
I mean, I don't have a revised number, but the look you both gave me when I said 2 made me regret. Thing.
You started the mix, Matt. I mean, you better start working out your mix parameters.
3.
Now.
Well, who would you put above Kiki Burton? Simona Halep, would still be above.
Still put Halep.
Sloane Stephens.
I mean, Burton's brushed Sloane Stephens aside.
Yeah, but if Stephens is on a game...
I would put... Mm. Stephens
at the
ahead.
French Open. Remember what she was like last year?
For sure, yeah. Okay, so... 3 is that,
Kvitova?
I mean,
I don't know if she beat
her as well.
Yeah, but this is Madrid. I mean,
I've just said that we can't draw conclusions from Madrid, and I am. But
look, she's in the mix. Right.
To conclude,
so yeah, and actually, I still come back to that, the fact that Madrid doesn't feel like the barometer that you can really trust. Maybe it'll end up being that, but it's so different. It couldn't be more different as a clay court event, really, at altitude, on a sort of a feeling of an indoor arena to the French Open. It's so different.
And just a shout out to Kiki Burton's for hitting the best worst shot of all time. Did you see it in the final?
No.
Where she had a smash on top of the net, and she hit it so badly that it actually hit Halep at the back of the court, and therefore Kiki Burton's won the point.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, Halep tried to get out the way of it, but it hit her full on, and that gave the point to Kiki Burton's. It was tremendous.
And she still high-fived her on the way to That's get the trophy.
Sensational.
She just completely shanked it, and it went flew long, but hit Halep.
And I'd love to do one of those.
Someone on Twitter was like, you know, when you're learning the rules as an umpire, that is a rule that you know about but never think you will have to actually implement.
That's just reminded me that she probably mentioned the Gael Monfils shot of the, because it might be better than the Pablo Cuevas shot that you live commentated from YouTube last week, David.
Could you describe Monfils' shot? I haven't. I've heard about it, but
I'm not sure it can be described.
Yes, just check it out.
The ball goes over his head, and he leaps in the, like, takes both feet off the ground, facing the wrong way, and smacks it back, sort of with his wrist, just snaps his wrist back, and fires it down the line for a winner.
It was like the Pablo Cuevas one, except his feet weren't on the ground.
Mm.
Oh my goodness!
It was ridiculous.
Can we stop the podcast? I need to go and have a look. I'll look at it after the show. Any other takeaways from the women's tournament in Madrid specifically? Did anybody catch your eye who maybe you weren't expecting to see do big things at this stage of the season, or did anybody underperform?
Belinda Bencic has kind of impressed me all season, but I didn't have particularly high expectations for her on clay, and
she didn't either.
But she found a level against Halep, which was extraordinary. Halep was just playing such a high level, and I thought, I mean, that's a level that you might be able to touch for a few games for someone else, but Bencic did it for a whole set and took that second set off Halep.
She also beat Naomi Osaka 7-5 in the third, I
think. They've got a nice little rivalry, those two, haven't they?
Which Bencic is winning at the moment. But still, I think, reasonably positive for Osaka.
I feel like there's a result you're missing, Matt.
Oh. Yeah, there was a result that caught my eye.
Oh, yeah. Regular followers of the Tennis Podcast will know that this is the year that we got introduced to a player called Victoria Kuzmova at the start of the year, when Matt decided to put her in the quarterfinals of the Australian Open in his predictions. That didn't quite materialise.
She's a left-handed Anna Ivanovic.
Yep. Right-handed Petra Kvitova.
And a right...
She's not even left-handed.
She's definitely not a left-handed.
Fantastic.
I only saw her in the flesh for the first time this week, Matt. Yeah.
So, hold on a minute. She did it, again, to quote the WTA insider, Courtney Nguyen, great interview on the WTA website that you should go and check out
with the next big thing.
Yeah, Victoria Kuzmova. And I mean, basically, Matt's got about five copies of it with him. but she has made some strides. However, there was one particular moment that slightly under-delivered this week.
There was a blip. you need 12 games to win a tennis match, minimum. Kuzmova won 12 points against Halep.
Oh, dear.
Six love,
not
six
in a row.
Love.
And she didn't win any games.
No games.
Character building, Matt.
Have either of you ever lost six love, six love?
Yes.
Yes.
Several times.
Yeah.
It didn't build any character, to be honest. It just made me want to quit.
Do you know, I lost... Have you ever been triple bageled?
No.
I got triple bageled once by Carlos Bernardes. The unfair.
I love that you carried on after two six love sets. You agreed to... I'd have said, yeah, should we make it best of three, mate? Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Of all the names that could have come out of your mouth there, Carlos Bernardes was literally last on my
list of possibilities. Carlos Bernardes is still thinking about it every day.
It was in Mallorca, 2000. We were playing it inside the Bullring Stadium.
You were in your physical prime then.
Not a whole lot to write down about that. But, I mean, it was one of those... It's one of those courts where every time you hit the ball, it sort of reverberates around the arena. Incredible acoustics in there. So even when you hit a shot that hits the back fence, it sounds amazing, right? That happened quite a few times. But it was his surface. It was clay. So I'm quite sure that if I got him onto the artificial grass of the Henley and Arden Tennis Club, where I and myself and Solihull Simon.
It's going to take quite a big swing.
Yes.
What's Kuzmova's best surface?
Hardcore.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right. So come late July, it's all happening.
Kuzmova rising.
The other really annoying thing about Carlos Bernardes is the number of times I called his shots out. And he challenged them from the far end because he's an umpire, and he got every one of them right.
I mean, you had Hawkeye.
No,
he came round the net and he checked the mark. It's like, I genuinely was, because I've hardly played any clay court tennis, I realised I cannot tell whether the ball is in or out. When it would land, I couldn't tell. And he would come around and I'd be convinced it's out, and he'd come around and be like, no, look, there's a bit touching.
Yeah. What's his game style?
He's a baseliner, doesn't move a lot, but my God, he made me move. And I don't move particularly well, as you know. So, there we are. There's my Carlos Bernardes tale. Doubles results from Madrid. We had a title for
Roger and Takao
over Thiem and Schwartzman in the men's doubles final, and in the women's
Takao forgot to thank his partner in the speech.
Oh.
It's catching.
He's done a Tsitsipas.
Becoming a thing.
And he also cast a bit of shade on Thiem and Schwartzman.
Oh, excellent.
He sort of said, well, I don't know if it was deliberate, but he sort of said, Dominic, Diego, I know this is just a bit of fun for you playing doubles, but, but if you if you played a bit more of it, you could be a really good Thiem.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant. And the women's doubles final was won by, oh, what a partnership this is, Shea Souay and Barbora Strytsova.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish I'd seen that. 6-3, 6-1 over Dubrovsky and Zhu. 6-3, 6-1. So they're the champions. Well done,
well,
Shea
there, David.
And Strytsova.
I did see their little message on Twitter, sort of thanking the fans that they'd won. They sort of were hiding behind flowers, and then they sort of revealed their very happy faces. I get the feeling that that's Souay Shea driven.
They were aware that the match is broadcast live on the telly and, you know, live scoring and everything.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't a surprise to most people. Shea Souay is still without sponsorship, by the way. So
get in there, folks. And also sponsor us.
Yeah, could we sponsor her?
Well,
you know, get your coins out.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right, so wouldn't that be interesting? I wonder whether she can accept our highest offer.
Well, let's find out.
Yeah. We better discuss what that is. Right, okay. So
just for a match. We get to play one French Open match.
Yeah, how much for a match, Shay? Is what we want
just
to know.
Just a patch, yeah. Not even a full outfit.
Who's going to design?
Okay.
We need to get a patch. How do you do patches? Just draw one. Okay, right, okay.
We might need to come up with a better proposal.
Yeah, David Law will draw on your top for you.
This isn't going to go well, is it? But anyway, this has been the Tennis Podcast. This is what you're listening to for. What?
David Ferrer.
David Ferrer, oh yeah.
Just quickly.
I forgot David Ferrer last week. Made everybody cry.
Yeah, at length. Yeah. It was a lengthy goodbye.
Yeah. In fact, he made me miss the winning goal in the Spurs game.
Did he?
Yeah, because I was watching his retirement and I missed the moment of drama in Spurs.
It was all for
David Ferrer.
It was very beautiful and poignant, and he was presented with a very big photo of himself by Feliciano Lopez's bare chest.
Yes, I mean, that did happen. So what a career, though, David Ferrer. How will you remember David Ferrer as a player?
A moment or a...
I don't know. What sticks out?
Well, he almost quit to do roofing or something, didn't he? He worked on a construction site.
Yes.
Apparently, his old coach used to lock him in a cupboard and only feed him bread and milk.
The story gathers legs every time you hear it. 3 weeks he was there. No.
And he thought it was too much like hard work, so he went to work on a construction site. Turned out that was quite hard work, and went back to the cupboard.
Yeah.
I looked at the top 10 in 2003, the end of 2003.
This is what Matt does in his spare time.
It literally is. And the average height in 2003, which was kind of Ferrer's first season on tour, the average height, well, 5 of the top 10 were under 6 foot. And now, only 1 of the top 10 is under 6 foot, Kei Nishikori, and 6 of the top 11 are 6'4" or above.
So this is your time,
I've
David.
I've still got a chance.
But Ferrer has actually said himself he thinks that people his height, under 6 foot, will become extinct in men's tennis.
Extinct.
So, which is a bit strong, but you know that shift. He's lived through that shift. You know,
the
numbers bear that out. But what will never become extinct is the attitude of David Ferrer and the way that he.
It's not good news for Dan Evans, that is it?
His approach.
Dan's doing just fine. He's qualified for Rome.
Beat Lajovic.
Yeah, it's good that. I tell you, I think one of the things that sticks out for me is just what Leon Smith once said to me. He said, this is the bloke I want to bring our juniors to watch above all others in terms of attitude and just how to carry yourselves.
And I love that he's got no chip on his shoulder or feeling of being hard done by about the generation that he's had to compete in. He said, they made me a better better player. I wouldn't have achieved what I did achieve had I not been in this era.
And one of my other memories of him is just how humble he is. I remember that ATP Tour did some interviews with the players at the World Tour Finals, I think maybe in its first year in London or second year, and they said to all the players, who do you think is going to win this tournament? And Thomas Burdick says, oh, I think I'm going to win. And Djokovic says, I think I'm going to win. And David Ferrer says, Nadal or Federer.
Brilliant. Rightio, that's David Ferrer. Great career. And we will wish him the very best in retirement.
The sound of one of my crutches falling to the floor.
Yes, Catherine's doing away with the crutches this week. Big week, folks. Here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com, and our mascot, Rio with a Y. We will be back with another one of these shows after Rome, which is just... and ongoing as we speak. So we'll be back after that next week. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.